tengan cuidado ahí.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
We took the week off last week.
What a week off for football it's been.
It was a good week off for football.
Hey, yeah, you always say that. Yeah, but we come back nice and refreshed, and
pretty refreshed.
Yeah, raring to go.
Yeah.
All ready to talk about the exciting game that happened at the weekend, the Copa Libertadores final. What a great match it was.
I'm trying to remember what happened. I can't remember what happened. Do you remember what happened?
I don't remember a lot of football happening, no.
Well, it was on Saturday, wasn't it?
No, I think it was on Sunday.
Oh,
yeah, no. It wasn't on Sunday.
It wasn't on Sunday either.
Okay.
Yeah.
We jest, of course.
We do, of course, jest. Now, you've covered this game twice. You've previewed this match twice in the box set.
Yeah.
Both on the Saturday night slot.
Yeah.
And both times it never happened.
Never happened, no. Yeah. So, in fairness, the first time round it got postponed because of a waterlogged pitch. There's not much that could be done about that. Weather happens.
Weather does indeed happen, yeah.
And so they moved it to Sunday. And it was fine. It was a great game, 2-2 draw. And all set up really nicely for a second leg. But then, frankly, all hell broke loose. And the game was postponed for 24 hours. And still, the Boca Juniors players were not really in any fit state to play. And so it was decided to suspend it until further notice.
Decided eventually, though, wasn't it? It was not without some protestations from the Boca players and then some solidarity from the River players.
There may have been some discord, though, for the Sunday. I think that there was some feeling from the Riverside to maybe get this game underway.
Right.
And the Boca players still didn't want to play. And I mean, and there was some pressure from CONMEBOL to do it, and indeed from the president of Argentina. So quite a few people, but not the president of FIFA. President of FIFA did say categorically that he under no circumstances put anyone under pressure to do that. Mm. And we all know that bald FIFA guy would never tell us a lie. So
that's the trouble. Whenever anything like this comes out, there is the push of rolling news media and social media as well to push out any story or any heard whispers.
Now, everyone is raising their objections in public.
Yeah.
So what's happening here is there's an argument taking place about when or whether or not to hold this game. Mm. And this argument is taking place in public. A lot of the time, these arguments will take place in private, and then people will sit around waiting for a few hours and go, what are they doing? And then they'll all come out as a kind of unified voice and go, we have decided to play this game tomorrow.
Mm.
But it's come across, it's much more chaotic. And that's probably actually how these kind of decisions get made. So I'm willing to cut them a little bit of slack because there's so much emotion involved, and nobody probably really does know what the right thing to do is. I remind you of a couple of years ago when the Dortmund coach was attacked by a bomber and Mark Bartra had to be taken to hospital. The players were traumatised. UEFA told them to get on with it. They played the game the next day. So I'm less inclined to be that critical of the way this was handled.
Yeah.
Did they ever find out what? I don't know.
Yeah, they did. There's a whole. Somebody was. Oh, it's a long story.
But yes, if you read the final chapter of his book.
If you read the final chapter of my book, I'll tell you all about it.
I look forward to reading that.
Yeah, my mind was going back to 1987, obviously, with the Champions League final.
Yeah, of course.
The events that happened there when the game went ahead, despite of those Juventus fans being killed in a crush.
Yeah.
On a lesser note, but also very important, I remember when there was a full run of fixtures in the Champions League played on 9/11.
Yes.
Because all the teams were in
everyone was there.
But I think, of course, they were in such muted atmospheres.
It was eerie. I suppose under those circumstances, everyone was there. They had literally everyone was with. It's like, well, do we go home and then come back next week?
Yeah, but I guess these games are never remembered well, though, are they?
No, and I don't suppose this would have done if it had gone ahead. The key thing is that some players were injured physically and obviously, very emotionally injured as well. And I mean, just not an environment for you to play a football match under those circumstances. If you're playing a game like the Champions League, if the players weren't directly affected by what happened with 9/11, you know, they weren't victims of an attack, whereas the Boca players were.
I mean, they'd been physically attacked. Some of those players had glass shards in their eyes, suffering from inhalation of pepper spray or the gas that was being used by the police, I'm assuming, that it was deployed and drifted into the bus. So crazy to expect them to play on the day. Also equally as crazy to expect them to play the next day. You don't get over something like that in 24 hours. You've had glass pulled out of your eyes or breathed in a noxious substance. I don't think even 48 hours is enough. You could argue they're not even a week's enough. because it's a pretty traumatic event, isn't it, to go through.
So who's to blame?
It's difficult.
I'll throw down some caveats first, because none of us are Tim Vickery, are we?
No.
Not the last time we checked, anyway.
No.
So we don't really have that much of an understanding of South American football, South American sports culture, or even South American politics, really, as far as that's concerned. So we don't know what life is like in Buenos Aires. So it's difficult to postulate, really. So, oh, well, we should blame these guys congregated here. They were there ready for a ruck.
Mm.
But what goes through their head to say, right, okay, oh, look, there's the opposition team bus. Let's go and smash it up.
I think that this type of behaviour is not unusual in Argentinian football.
Yeah.
So I read only a few weeks ago there was a second division tie that resulted in a riot afterwards. So the police had to be deployed. I mean, and when we're talking police, these are not, you know,
yeah.
In Britain you have an idea of a bobby on the beat, don't you?
Yeah.
In most other countries, it's a fairly military-style organisation, isn't it? So when police are deployed in countries like Argentina, police are really deployed. That was a kind of an uprising that had to be put down. And that was a second division tie. So these people take their football very, very seriously. I also read that the build-up to this game, which is quite unique in that these clubs have never played each other in this stage of this competition ever, and never will in these circumstances again, because they're switching from two legs to one leg and a neutral venue from next year. Shame it wasn't this year. But I think even the Minister of Health got involved because of all the hype that was going on surrounding the build-up to the game, saying that people, you know, there's a risk to people's health. Like, you know, heart attacks are going to go up. We need to... And they were talking about having broadcasts that had muted sound and kind of chimes in the background and things like that. Because, I mean, if you've got, you know, millions of people tuning into that and they're all that wound up, there is a risk of an epidemic of
hysteria.
Stress-related hysteria.
Is
absolutely.
It,
yeah. That's the extent that this game had been hyped up. You know, ultimately, it resulted in those terrible events outside of the ground, and someone could have died. I mean, the vice president of Boca Juniors grabbed the wheel of the coach to stabilize it, because the driver, if he didn't faint, he was knocked unconscious. I don't know. Understandably, who is to blame? I'd imagine there's a lot of things to look at. The hyping of the game.
Yeah.
The way that football is looked at in that society, maybe the government isn't doing enough to address the culture that exists in some areas surrounding that. So I don't think there's probably one thing you can look at.
Those are the sort of things that we'd be looking at if a similar thing happened here, wouldn't we, Terry?
Yeah.
Those are the checklists we'd go down. It's interesting you say that about like the overhyping of the game and this form of hysteria that has come about it. Now, we often see these things in all manner of walks of life. It's becoming a bit too common for us, really, with the political situation in the US and over here as well. Now, of course, you've got G20 is starting in Buenos Aires on Friday. So there's got to be some underlying tension there. There's already been a couple of bombs gone off. But there's loads of extra security in there, obviously, because you're going to have Donald Trump, Justin Trudeau, Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, who at this time I think is still Theresa May.
Still here, is it?
I haven't checked. I've been in here for 10 minutes, so we don't know. So, yeah, all these people are going to be in town.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's going to be all the protests. There always are when there's a G20 summit going on and all the accompanying problems that brings. It just seems baffling that this game was actually put on. You mentioned in the box set about the fact that there weren't going to be any away fans there. Now, that already says to you that there is going to be a problem. There's going to be a very hostile atmosphere there.
They've banned away fans for some years now.
Yeah.
Because of this kind of thing that happened. So that wasn't necessarily a big surprise, although I think there was some talk that perhaps they would allow away fans because it was a different competition. Obviously, that didn't happen. Not that it made a slight bit of difference, because there was still trouble. I think the G20 thing is worth reflecting on, because one of the other things that was held to be responsible for what happened, obviously, when we are saying who is to blame, the people who chucked all that stuff at the coach, they are the people to blame, because they are the people what did it. But you can certainly look to negligence on the part of various different organisations for not doing their job properly. And one of those, it would appear, is also the police, whose escort took them down the main boulevard, which is where all the River fans congregate before a match.
Yeah.
In their thousands. They all go there. And so they took the Boca Juniors team coach down that road.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen. No. Normally they take a different route.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether or not one of the reasons why they took that route is some kind of byproduct of the preparations for the G20. I've got no way, I'm simply just talking off the top of my head there.
Yeah.
So whether or not it's simply that they were organising some other rehearsal somewhere else in the city and they couldn't take the coach around there,
yeah.
or were all the best people all off planning the security arrangements and they left the Boca River match in the hands of the Muppets, you know, to say, oh, yeah, we'll go down here. It could have been that, or it could have been none of those things. But certainly a lot of people who know more about these things than I said that it was extremely unusual for, in fact, it just didn't happen. You know, they never took them down that road. That's where all the River fans are. You don't take the Boca team coach down that road.
Yeah.
And they did. And then, obviously, it all ensued from there. Maybe it would have been better if Condonville had just sort of like scratched their head and thought, you know, maybe we should just hastily arrange this and bring forward the plans to have the final at a neutral venue and see if we can scare up a venue somewhere else, somewhere nearby. But I suspect that's probably logistically really difficult to do. But you assume that the reason why we have these two-legged finals is because South America is such a huge country. And also at the risk of sounding condescending, perhaps a bit patronising. But my impression is that income levels in South America vary and fluctuate hugely, even more so than they do in Europe. And so it's not easy for everyone to just travel the length and breadth of South America to go and watch your team play in a final. And that's why they have the two-legged thing. So it's quite an interesting move that they've made this decision. But it just seems to be just a bit ironic and a bit sad that the final two-legged game happened to take place in the same city. Mm. I wonder what would have happened if they just said, well, look, actually, guys, what we'll do is we'll just go across the River Plate and we'll hold it in Uruguay and do it there as a final. And you still get plenty of people going over there. I mean, but, you know, I wonder. But it's a pie in the sky, really. But
of course, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And especially if you do a podcast. It's brilliant. Because you can sound really, 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 really clever. Yes,
exactly.
But there's no way that anyone could have... would have thought, okay, look, it's in the same city. Let's just take it to a neutral venue, because when everyone is ready for two showpiece finals, you know you've got one in your home turf. Before the games, you're going to say, oh, you're overreacting. Look, everything's going to go fine. We've had this before. We had the Copa Sudamericana 3 years ago. Was a semi-final was between these two teams. They managed to get a result out of the end of it. It's easy to say, well, the media hyped it up too much. Everyone is trying to make the most out of a game like this, aren't they? Everyone. Sponsors, organisers, the owners, and even the fans. Even the fans want to make a big deal of it. No one wants to say, oh, well, it's just another game. Yeah. No! It isn't.
I mean, it is the final to end all finals. I mean,
well, this is the way it's hyped, wasn't it?
We called it the final at the end of the world.
This is two of the greatest rivals in the history of football.
Yeah.
Playing in the biggest game that that club football can possibly give you, and also in a format that's about to go, it absolutely lives up to its hype.
I think that it kind of looks like that nobody was really in control, which if you're living in Britain at the moment, it'd be quite a familiar feeling. But it does feel like that, because the president of Argentina even said that whoever loses this game will hang their heads in shame for 20 years. I mean, that's not... bringing people together.
No.
You know, even if that's the truth.
Yeah.
And I think he actually has a connection with Boca. I think he maybe used to
be the president of Boca.
That's what I thought. So that doesn't help things. I mean, that should have been more of a conciliatory note, shouldn't it? Saying, you know, let's just pull ourselves together. It's just a game of football. We need to, you know, with the eyes of the world are on us. Would have been maybe a bit, I should have been a speechwriter. I can't speak Spanish. But, you know, that's what you would expect the president of the country to say and not to actually add to the problems.
He should have been a speechwriter in the 1990s. Because this is what the fucking state of statesmen these days.
Yeah.
They took all this bullshit, this hyperbolic shit. Like 20 years ago, a head of state for most countries would have not have used that kind of language.
Yeah.
They would have been moderate and like conciliatory and saying, well, we're all hoping for a fantastic game of football.
Yeah.
And we all hope the best team wins. Yeah. And it's cliched and it's churlish and it's not what everyone's thinking. But you expect your statesmen to be statesmanlike.
Yes.
To just try and draw the heat out of this thing and remind everybody that it's actually just a game of football.
Mm. Yeah.
Is there an appetite for people to do that, for organisers to take the heat out of it, though? Because you've seen it in other sporting events. You look at boxing, for instance. The whole circus behind it is there of building up the hype, building up even more. So that there are fights in the stands between rival fans, because it's just seeped out so much. This whole sort of, you know, fake... hatred that is built up between the fighters that they just have to.
Yeah, and it is fake as well, isn't it?
It's entirely fake.
It's to sell tickets. That's all it's there.
And pay per view. Yeah.
Yeah, they all go through this ritual.
Yeah.
Where they banter each other, don't they? And again, angry words are exchanged. And I'm sure the emotion at the time is very real, but it is quite.
It's horrible.
It is fake. Yeah. And of course, because you can see when they punched each other's lights out, you know, afterwards, then they hug and, you know, like they're best buddies. Because I mean, I imagine that that is what you would do in a situation like that. I think that unless you can demonstrate a causal link between violence as a consequence of media hype, then I don't think that it's anyone's interest to try and draw the heat out of it. But I mean, I think that these are questions that do need to be asked and say, look, you're so desperate to get people to watch this. I'll participate in it, engage with it, bet on it. You're placing so much heat under it, it's ridiculous. You know?
But I think that there has to be, there is a link. That's what the word propaganda is for, isn't it? You use the media to control people.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, that's why advertising works. And, you know, using inflammatory language does inflame people.
But that's what advertisers actually want. They want the passion there. They want to be seen to be part of something that gets people. In a hysterical frame of mind,
then they'll consume.
Yeah, and then they'll spend money. Yeah, exactly. Preferably on them. But what they don't want is they don't want to be associated with unpleasantness.
Exactly.
So then it goes the other way. So then you'll see all of the sponsors suddenly backing away from Argentine football, which is the last thing that it needs.
Yeah.
And of course, this comes right at the worst time because everyone is looking at it as well. Because we don't talk about South American club football on this podcast. No. I don't think we ever have in 350-odd episodes.
We don't have access to it over here.
No, and when we do, it's usually on at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that's right. Because they don't time their kickoffs for European markets, do they? So
although this final was lucky,
we were kind of lucky because we were going to get the opportunity to watch it, and I watched the first game and it was fascinating, and just like the vibrancy and the colour and the noise and the passion, and it came through the television and you could feel it. It must be electric to be in that situation. Yeah. It's no wonder people go mad.
But part of the reason that you chose it, and part of the reason why you sat down and watched it, was all because of the backstory of of the whole sort of.
Yeah, it's one of the great. It's one of the great rivalries in the history of football, and it's one that you never get the chance to see that often. And the Continental Cup final as well, the South American equivalent to the Champions League, the highest possible prize. I mean, why would you not want to watch that game if you're a football fan? If you're a general football fan, then you'd want to watch that game, surely.
And of course, this final has to be played within the next couple of weeks because the Club World Cup kicks off in mid-December. Now, over in Europe, we go Club World Cup.
What's that then?
Yeah, what's that?
What channel's that on? On Channel 5, is it?
Yeah.
Eurosport.
Yeah. Who keeps carrying that? Free sports.
Yeah. I bet you it is this year, actually.
That is the general feeling about the Club World Cup over here. Remember when Man U dropped out the FA Cup because they expanded it? When was that? It was 99, wasn't it?
It was
99, 2000.
It was all part of the 2006 World Cup bid.
Yeah.
It was to keep. Yeah. And it was a.
And everyone it was just a collective eye rolling, wasn't it? Going, well, first of all, what the fuck's the Club World Cup?
Yeah.
And why is it more important than the FA Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a centenary tournament. Or was it a centenary? It was a special tournament because it was an expanded tournament as well.
It was,
For that one tournament, they expanded it. And then they put it back there. I think we only ever pay attention to it when an English team is in it, which is rare.
Very rare nowadays,
So, I mean, maybe Real Madrid this year. So I imagine that I think I have got the impression that in Spain it's quite a big deal. I know, for example, in Germany, the Club World Cup is quite a big deal, the Intercontinental. Not to the same degree as its domestic competitions in Europe. Yeah. But I think it depends whereabouts in Europe you are. But in England, it is a tournament of moderate interest.
But in South America, it's big news.
Yeah.
Because obviously the European competitions have got such worldwide reach now that it dominates all the narrative as far as club football is concerned.
Yeah.
If you're living in South America or if you're a South American club, it's very easy to think, hang on, our countries have won quite a few World Cups. We're still world powers, like it or not, in football. And yet our competition is downgraded because
all your best players go to Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. Because and basically they've got all the money as well, haven't they? So the Club World Cup is the one opportunity they do have to come over and stick it to the European superpowers. So it does matter. This whole thing about winning the Libertadores is you're not only the South American champions, you've got a chance to be world champions and bring that back home as well.
Yeah, you got a chance to beat Real Madrid in the final of the World Club Cup, assuming Real Madrid can get there.
Yeah.
Given they lost 3-0 to Eibar at the weekend, they might not. So, it's a massive deal for them. So, they need to get this organised pretty quickly. So they need to find... I mean, I would be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at anything at all. And again, my lack of knowledge of the culture and traditions and the practices of Argentinian life, civil society, means that I don't know what will happen next. My instinct is that it will be played at a neutral venue, probably outside Argentina.
I heard on the way here that they were considering playing it in the Emirates.
Yeah,
which
that
is obviously a hell of a long way away. But then again, if you're trying to get away from what you're trying to get away from, you know, a long way away is not far enough, really, is it? So,
it can add sports washing to the litany of travesties surrounding this match.
Sorry, when you said the Emirates, you meant actually in
the UAE.
In the UAE.
Not in North London.
Not in North London.
No, Emirates. Sorry, I should have made that clear.
That would be awesome.
It would be awesome.
Try and get tickets.
We could go to that.
Uruguay played Brazil there, like, just the other week. So it does happen.
Yeah.
There isn't a massive Argentine diaspora in London, though. I mean, there is a pretty big gap. But then there is in London's got a diaspora for almost every country that you care to name.
Yes.
But I think there are countries where it's like, Spain, for example.
Yeah.
But I would have thought North America, either, Mexico or perhaps somewhere in the United States.
Yeah.
Maybe in one of the southern states in the United States would be an opportunity. And I'm sure that they could probably fire up the grills on one of them big college stadiums there and have it there.
Yeah.
Whether or not. I think I'm not quite sure what Donald Trump would think about 40,000
South Americans,
Argentines marching over the border to go and watch a soccer match. I think that would freak him out completely, especially when at the time he'd probably be in Argentina avoiding the rain or the tear gas or whatever else. That would be quite funny. So, Pat, on reflection, do you know what? That's not going to happen.
It's not, isn't it? Yeah. So, interesting times ahead,
definitely
in South America. But yeah, definitely worth keeping an eye on if you've got any sort of interest in that sort of thing, or even if you haven't, just develop an interest on it. Do it. Mm. Now, we've got some. We've got some same city derbies this weekend in England, in the Premier League. This is what we're going to be filling up our box set, aren't they?
They are. They're not quite as febrile as Boca versus River, though.
No. And this is one thing that I sort of think, when I was talking about overhyping and everything, and the Sky love to hype a local derby. But when you see Liverpool, Everton, and that's a big derby. But
But Liverpool do like a bus attack as well, though, don't they?
Liverpool, we have bus attacks
they're
here.
They're fond of a bus attack.
Last year wasn't it against City in the Champions League?
I mean, you might see Liverpool saying, hold my pint. Watch this. Let's hope not. I'm joking.
No, we're joking, obviously, but
yeah.
I mean, in Chelsea v Fulham, I think as. West London derby,
I mean,
people throw their Volvo keys at each other.
Their prawn sandwiches are going to
be. It's not going to be the same, is it?
Yeah. But you got the North London derby sandwiched in the middle of that as well.
Yeah, that's a very angry derby, isn't it? Because there's some genuine unpleasantness,
Yeah, it's more sneery than anything else, though.
Yeah, but I don't think that it quite compares to, as I said, that fribrility of Boca v River. But I think that were it not for the true unpleasantness, then I think that a lot of people would look at the rivalry and look at the atmosphere, certainly that first leg, and think, if we could just have a bit of that and miss that aspect of it, then say, actually, our football is far less intense emotionally than it used to be, and it lacks that colour. And I don't know whether or not that's true. I just think perhaps, emotions are still pretty much there, but just culturally, I think it's just very different to what it is.
English football went through a watershed, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
And as a consequence, British football went through a watershed because of what happened in the 80s. And obviously we changed the way that we watch football forever, certainly live. And I think that has changed it somewhat. But they seem to have retained that in Germany, though. To some extent, there's still colour there, isn't there?
Mm.
And it's still it's very intense, but it does seem to have died off in England.
Yeah, but even then, we discussed this last year in our fan protest podcast about how it has spilt over the edge there, even with fans as seemingly as laid back and docile as Dortmund fans, getting up to some pretty heinous things when RB Leipzig.
RB Leipzig, yeah, there's that. And I mean, also there was reports also of known Nazis infiltrating back into the Sud Tribune and, you know, trying to take control of various ultra groups on the south stand, which is deeply worrisome and but is reflective of what's happening in Germany in general.
Yeah.
Dare I say what's happening in Europe in general, yeah, is that there's been a rise in confidence in the far right. And, you know, criminal elements and deviant behaviour sees big, big crowds full of emotion and thrives. And ultimately, yeah, this is what these guys in Buenos Aires did. Yeah. You know, I mean, I won't say, oh, they're not football fans, because I suspect they probably are football fans, because almost everybody in Argentina is a football fan.
Mm.
But they're also deviants, and they see an opportunity to practice their deviant behaviour. And this is will always be something that football needs to be wary of. And it's not satisfactory to say, these people aren't football fans, we wash our hands of them. So, well, this is the environment that we've created for ourselves, and we then have to take some kind of responsibility and ownership to try and police that as much as possible, without otherwise the police end up policing it. And no one wants that, because the police are terrible at policing things.
Yeah. Or the state gets involved. And we saw exactly what that did in English football as well, when Thatcher started to get involved in it.
There's some things you where you do want the state to get involved in, like health services and welfare states.
Mm.
But there are other things you don't want the state to get involved in, and that's, you know, civic actions like organised sports, because they're rubbish at it. They make bad legislation, and they usually are too heavy-handed.
Yeah.
It's better for these things to be managed as much as possible amongst ourselves, and I think we have a responsibility to acknowledge that, take some ownership of that, I think.
Mm. Agreed.
There is the question with the two teams, that there is a level of identity of the two clubs, one being the more established club or being the club of the establishment, and the other club being the working men's club.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a narrative that happens in a lot of cities where there are two teams.
Yeah.
While this may have been true in the early days, it's seen as less true in modern times. But still, the thinking behind that still goes on. There is that narrative that goes on, or it underlines everything as an unspoken truth in there. Are narratives like that helpful or not nowadays?
Well, I think that they're helpful to help you understand the history of the rivalry and the reasons why you support the club that you support. So if you are a Boca fan, you're identifying yourself with the working class dock workers of Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
If you're a River fan, then you're not. And I suppose if you're like, for example, if you're a Celtic fan, then you're identifying yourself with the Catholic community in Glasgow, and perhaps in a broader sense, in the Celtic nations as well.
Yeah.
And obviously the other side with Glasgow Rangers. And obviously in situations like that, where people lack the emotional maturity to cope with the emotions that football generates, then that can probably be a bad thing.
Mm.
It's worth pointing out that most people have the maturity to be able to cope with wild swings of emotions that football will bring you without the need to resort to violence.
Yeah. Well, you've seen this with Newcastle and Sunderland, though, as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
Where there are old stories about why the two hate each other.
Yeah.
And really, that bear no resemblance to anything, to your experience or anyone who goes there has experienced.
Yeah, you don't hear anybody making, obscure chants about coal rights being granted in the 18th century in some kind of, humorous rhyme. It doesn't happen. And if you were to ask people their view on that, they'd probably go, I've no idea what you're talking about. But, that's where these things come from. And you talk about the Glasgow thing is to do with, wars that were fought over Ireland. So these things tend to be because of cultural history, and you have two communities coming together and to watch a game of football, and that is an outpouring there. And it really has nothing to do with football. It has everything to do with these two communities and what they think about their opposition. And unfortunately, that brings with it sometimes some quite poisonous elements and some poisonous thoughts. And then, some mistimed or misjudged amounts of alcohol, some infiltration from the wrong groups, some overhyping by the press, and some callous words by politicians, and you've got a really, really dangerous situation. And I think that's the same when you have any gathering of large numbers of people. The authorities always sweat when you've got massive crowds of people anyway. It's terrifying for them, because how do you control that many people? It's very, very difficult to do. So when you've got a powder keg situation, which we probably haven't got this weekend across England, but you certainly did have in Buenos Aires. You know, that's a real headache for those people. As Terry said, you need to take responsibility because there's all those things that are going on. And I think that in the last few games that Sunderland and Newcastle played, it got a little bit more mature because the police stopped being so heavy-handed. You know, it kind of culminated in that time where that Newcastle guy punched the horse,
yes,
which was straight out of Blazing Saddles, which is crazy. But it got to that point where the police were spending so much time and resource that, to be fair, in the age of austerity, they don't have policing a game of football, for God's sake. It's a game of football that they started to ease back and go, well, look, let's be a bit more light touch about this and see what happens.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, there were still issues, but there weren't as many. And it may well be down to the light touch that if you treat people like adults, then they may well, you know, behave like that. I don't think that necessarily would have worked in Buenos Aires this weekend gone. But I certainly think that's something maybe to look at going forward.
Austerity is an interesting factor. That I think it was Jonathan Wilson reported that austerity has hit the police services quite hard.
Yes.
In Buenos Aires, and there's been quite a lot of cutbacks. And there's been cutbacks, obviously, almost in a lot of Western countries as a consequence of political austerity. 1960s, Dortmund and Schalke, if you watch the footage of those games, everybody there, they're all sat there, they're relaxed, watching the game and just enjoying the game. You know, this is one of the biggest rivalries in German football back then. And that's because everybody back then, they had the big economic miracle. Everyone had work. No, everyone was too busy to get angry and upset and focus on smaller matters. They were too busy with the work. And when after the economic collapse, and particularly in Dortmund and in the Ruhr area, Dortmund and in Gelsenkirchen, I mean, unemployment went through the roof. And that coincided when the troubles, the edge between the two rivalries, two sets of supporters started.
You see the same in Britain as well. So it wasn't until the 70s it started to become a problem.
I think economic conditions play a huge role in stuff like that. I mean, like Argentina has been through an economic disaster over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's not really with any signs, as far as I can see, of it really recovering anytime soon. You know, I don't think that can be discounted.
Yeah, and as well as that, I mean, as you quite rightly mentioned with the G20 coming up, if you look at the way that South America has been treated for the last 50 years by Western nations, the way that they have experimented with their extreme economic models down there, and the disparity that you've seen between rich and poor because of that created these terrible pockets of poverty, and then you throw into the mix the last 10 years since the economic crash, it could well be that, you know, that you're seeing a society rebelling, and these are the symptoms of that underlying tension. So yeah, economics has got a big part to play.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I bet you wanted to listen to a football podcast this
week. Yeah, well, you're listening to the wrong one, guys.
Yeah, but there is going to be some football on this weekend. As I say, all those derbies in the Premier League, they're all going to be in our box set. But there's also on Friday and Saturday, there's a heap load of FA Cup action as well, because it's the second round. Friday night, we've got Solihull Moors playing Blackpool.
Boom.
Halifax Town versus AFC Wimbledon on Saturday lunchtime. They're two Phoenix clubs, aren't they, those ones?
Yes.
And you've got Wrexham versus Newport County as well. So South Wales versus North Wales there as well. So if you want to read what we think is going to happen in those games, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link to the weekend box set, and you can just sign up there. But that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fern, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
This is a farrago.